Hello everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to build a great culture myself. And so I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas that I wrote about in the book and get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast. Today, I'm joined by Damien Moo. Damien left university with an accounting degree and started work in life insurance and superannuation. And after cutting his teeth and a couple of competitors, he joined AIA Australia in 2007. Worked his way up over the next 7 years and became CEO in 2014. Under his stewardship, AIA has experienced phenomenal growth and is now on the largest life insurance company in Australia, which Damien puts down to a brilliant group of people with a collaborative mindset who are constantly looking to innovate and work with clarity of vision and purpose. Of course he would say that. Perfect culture maker and leadership tweet. Damien, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Colin. Great to be here with you, mate.
I normally kind of start these by asking for people's background a little bit, Damien, but I'm going to do it slightly differently. I'm going to go left field because I was talking to a friend yesterday and we were talking about ambition and she said, I just don't know whether I'm cut out to be a CEO. Do you think I should know by now whether I'm CEO material? I was like, I don't know. I'm speaking to one tomorrow. I'll ask him. I'll come back to your early career in a minute. But was there ever an aspiration where you thought CEO is where I'm going, or was it just kind of a natural evolution of you?
Well, Colin, clearly from the age of three, I wanted to be in life insurance and then I wanted to be a CEO by the age of five. No, Colin, it's a great question and people often ask. And I think if you look at it that way, you probably, look, there's no right or wrong, but for me, I define leadership as a privilege and a responsibility. And I think you need to honor that first and you have to desire and crave leadership. Okay. And what I mean by that is it's not about a position or authority. If you think the CEO role is about having a position of authority to be able to, you know, have more impact, then that's not the way it works. In fact, it's like anything in life, Colin. You know, you finally get a Qantas frequent flyer card, then you get to the bronze and gold, and then, you know, there's this thing called chairman. It just keeps going, right? And you never get there. And in fact, sometimes there's an interesting point in an organization where you flip from sort of going in a very senior leadership role where you have just one person to really report to, which is the CEO, but a lot of people that you have a span of impacting and responsibility for, to then going to the CEO role where all of a sudden you may still have a lot of people that, you know, are under your care and leadership, but a lot of stakeholders that you're accountable and answerable to again. So it's really about coming back to, and sorry, it's a long answer. It is, for me, it was about the desire and the energy I had to have to be able to lead by creating a compelling vision and having people work towards a collective purpose. That's what got me going. And all of a sudden you wake up and go, wow, I didn't need to be the CEO to do that. I can do that in certain parts of the organization. But if that role was to come, then it gives you an even bigger platform to try and be able to do that. But you, servant leadership is what happens when you move into the CEO role.
Did you always have that drive, Damien? So when you think back, you know, kind of when you were studying in university, was this real desire to do well, or did you just kind of find something that you felt you were good at that you could grow from?
Colin, I think your past has so much to play in where you know, who you are, right? So while we always talk about, let's not dwell on the past, let's not live in the past, you have to look to the past to know who you are today. And that informs where you go tomorrow. It doesn't mean you're going to live in the past. There's a lot of good answers to help, you know, that have shaped your, what I call your experiences and your intuition, which ultimately come together with knowledge to guide you with wisdom. So for me, yes, it comes down to the fact that I was born and blessed the first generation Aussie, and my family came across from Sri Lanka and other parts of Asia. And there was a huge work ethic in our family. you just had to work hard, right? And we were grateful for the opportunities we had. So very early on, a work ethic. My grandmother worked in a factory for 25 years from the time she came along. My mum, you know, we'd have meat and she's straight back to work a month later. No one complained about that. We were just really grateful. But that hard work ethic and drive really sort of was instilled at that early age, and watching my dad, you know, clean in the morning, work during the day, study at night, you know. And so I've always had a very strong work ethic. I guess in some respects, it's been a strength and a weakness, where sometimes, you know, you can go too hard. And I had to recognize where that was having a negative impact on me personally or on the culture of the organization. Because everyone thinks they have to keep pace, and that's not what it's about. But it was then, and then, you know, through that, working as a collective, as a family, around a common goal to give our family a better life, and watching how they all sort of did their bits, was my first introduction to sort of you know, hard work and aligned purpose. And then I was just very much, you know, had this attitude of gratitude and wanted to do my best to give back for the opportunity I had. And so it was a hard work ethic from very early on, and wanting to be part of a community.
I love that attitude for gratitude. And I think, you know, one of the common themes, certainly during these interviews with culture makers, is they all seem to have that ethic. Sometimes it's observed. So, you know, it was for me and my family. And I looked at the work that my dad did and my mum did, and same for you. Sometimes it's something that they feel that they have to do, and, you know, they have to be the driving force. Did university really prepare you for work? Or when you got into your first job, what was your first job? Was it like a culture shock for you?
Yeah, my first job was probably helping my dad on the days that he didn't get up early enough to go to do the cleaning job. And that was in my primary school. And I would cry and complain and whatever, but, you know, that was. And then you just sort of worked through and did all the things every other good Aussie kid does, right? Had the paper round, had the lawn mowing business, very entrepreneurial very early on. I remember printing back then. You remember that they had that purple ink that used to, you know, oh my gosh, I used to love the smell of that, by the way. But I'd make the flyers and discount for pensioners and wheel my mower out, and then back to cleaning and, you know, working in a Mr. Muffler store, worked at whatever job, bars, clubs, whatever it was. I wasn't afraid of hard work and then laboring with people, builders and others, whatever it came, I was up for it. You know, that, again, I think it's just taught me lots of different experiences and got to work with lots of different people. And then you ended up finding yourself, I was actually pretty good in school, high school. I lost my way in uni. I went from being I wouldn't even wag a day at school. I wanted to play. I was mad at my sport. I loved my AFL, mad on my cricket, and really very studious at my studies in the sense. But I also had, you know, would like to go out and very sociable. I never wagged a day or anything like that. Then I got to uni and you get this freedom, right? And it's like 12 contact hours a week. Are you serious? I was 16 because I was doing a double degree for the first year. I lost my way. Without that discipline and the rigor and having this freedom, which I wasn't mature enough to cope with, funny enough, as hardworking as I was, I'd get up, get to uni and get there earlier than anyone, hit the gym, and then the class had started at 8 and I'd be at the front at 7:45, 8 o'clock this class starts and I didn't go in. So, Colin, I basically, and this is, I failed my first year of uni, but I had a great life experience and I needed that because I probably didn't have much of a life experience outside working and sport and school, you know. So, yeah, I then got back on the straight and narrow.
And then did you go in kind of at the ground floor once you got a first job? Was it, you know, very much order processing? And then kind of as you went into managerial, were you trying to correct some of the things that you'd seen others do, or were you winging it like most of us do early on?
Oh, look, I think so. A couple of things. One, I did very much then get busy and get focused and, you know, realize that, hey, you know, there'll be plenty of time to do lots of things in life, but let's get this done. I've reassessed, you know, I just wanted to focus in on the business side of the degree and drop the computing. I realized that just felt good because it was a double degree or whatever, and I had no passion for it. But then I finished, and like everyone else, thought, hey, well, I'm just going to walk into the corner office, aren't I? I've got a degree now. Hey. I've got my degree. I'm going to, like, you know, but I was very fortunate. And it's sometimes you've got to, it is about those little bits of luck and fortune along the way. And so I got an opportunity to do some work experience at Colonial Mutual. And while I was at uni and just in work, you know, work experience and doing that. And because I actually was pretty good at entering the mail and doing the whatever, when I finished uni, they said, would you like a job? And I said, yeah, which one of those offices will be mine?
I've got my degree here. It's framed and ready to go. I've got my degree.
But basically, mate, I started at the bottom, and that there is no bottom. It was a job that I loved. I was brought on as an administrator, and my first job was to enter all the mail in to the system so that if a call came in, the call center could tell people whether they'd received the policy documents or not. And I just loved, like, I just wanted to be part of the team. So once I got over myself and realized I wasn't going to be in the corner office, I just wanted to be part of the team, and the team had goals and it was like a family, right? Had measures it had to get. And I just wanted to get the mail logged in as quickly as possible so that I could then get in and do something else. And then they allowed me to, you know, use the rest of the day, not allowed me, you know, were happy for me to then take on some claims and other things. And within a year, I was the senior and the team leader. In 18 months, I was the team leader. But it wasn't because I did anything but support the team. I just worked hard to do the best I possibly could at the job I was given. And I think that's my best advice about, even when you asked, talking to your friend yesterday about the, you know, I don't know if I want to be the CEO. I always say to people, it's great to think about where you want to go, but the number one thing is never get sidetracked by the fact that the most important thing to getting that job is to be phenomenal in the one you are and starting to do the things of that other job from where you are. I've seen, unfortunately, a lot of people get lose their way for a little bit where they get a seed that they plant themselves, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, that's the job I want. And they're so fixated on that other job that they lose sight of the opportunity they have right in front of them, and it can then become quite a disengaging seed. So, you know, I'm about, you know the things you enjoy doing, work on the areas you want to, have a plan and a dream, but get on with the work.
And so you joined AIA, because I've got a bunch of things I want to ask you about your role in AIA. You joined AIA in 2007. So presumably from what you learned at Colonial Mutual, I think you spent some time at Super Partners as well. And then was it quite different? Or, I mean, because from a subject matter perspective, obviously it's fairly similar, but was the culture that you found at AIA quite different? If so, how did you adapt? And then how did you bring things to that yourself?
Yeah. Great question. All very different. So I started out at Colonial, which was really the old Colonial Mutual, which was the old life insurance and superannuation businesses. And I was managing the Colonial Master Fund operations, and then went to, that was bought by CBA. It went across to Sydney and I transitioned the business, and I was a mummy's boy and loved my AFL. So I came back. And then I got I started a job at Super Partners managing the insurance and claims for 16 of industry funds. I've had some great sponsors who have supported me and given me opportunities. I probably was, you know, I think I was 25 at the time. And that was a very big role early on in your career, right? To be able to go up to those, manage those trustee and board relationships and, you know, portfolio of 13 million members claims. Right. So, you asked me, did you just go in and wing it? There's things I'm sure I didn't know, but what I did know was, you know, how to manage operations from the time I'd learned from working with good people. I was naturally just a family type person, so good at creating teams without knowing how I was doing that necessarily back then. So that was a fantastic opportunity. I then moved across to, got some good advice from the CEO, who said, Damien, you're either going to be really, you know, fantastic, or you're going to crash and burn, one of the two. Which one? I don't know. So he said, we need to test you out. So they threw me into working on the integration and transition of Australian Retirement Fund and putting together Australian Super and me and the Australian Super Operations Manager for the new fund. And that was amazing, because we got to work with a group of people where we were, again, what I did was we wanted to set a vision and a purpose, and it was about how we were going to create back then. I mean, this was then, the superannuation fund for Australians to have the dream of a phenomenal retirement in this blessed country of ours. And we were just like, and that got us going. And I was sleeping in the sick bay. We were working around the clock to try and, you know, do this in 12 months, you know, the biggest sort of back then, the two giants, right, to create the mega fund. And, you know, Ian Silk was the CEO, and he was an amazing leader that of that fund. And, you know, we really, Paul Costello and others were there, and it was a great time. But I was on the super partner side, obviously on the operations administration side, but it was a phenomenal experience. And I was so proud of the team, and we were up and running, and we hit our plan, and we, you know, delivered. And, you know, it was the start, right? And then I ended up, yeah, then I switched across to life insurance. So I came from an operations background and client management, but really, then sort of everyone knows me because I came across and headed up sort of distribution and marketing. But it was that operations background. That was the most amazing experience. Like, that's where you learn the importance of customer service, managing complexity and issues without any love and recognition. But no, it develops a strong culture. So, but all the way through, Colin, what I would say is I've always brought my authentic self to it, okay? And that's why I still look like Bart Simpson haircut 20 years later. You know, I'm not, I believe in being who you are, authentic, and that's not perfect. And I've always brought my family feel, my care, my drive, my, you know, my three things have stood me well through life. One, am I operating from my principles and values 100% of the time? Have I given my best? Because you can't lose when you've given your best, and that's all you can do. And then the third one, is it about me or the greater good? And if that third one is probably the one that can trip most people up. But I feel like, you know, more than not, thankfully, I've always been more inspired and driven by the greater good outcome. And that's why I say focus on doing the best you can. And, you know, the opportunities open up. I didn't interview for a job. Most jobs, they, you know what I mean? They just sort of came because I was doing what I was supposed to do.
That's awesome. Now, I want to talk about well-being, and I want to talk about vitality, because I know AIA, certainly under your stewardship, big push on mental well-being, which is something that we traditionally, you know, I was joking the other day, when I first started out, mental well-being was someone shouting at you and telling you get yourself together. We didn't really do it. Was that something that AIA have done really well? The other thing as well is vitality is a big part of your life too. And so, you know, one of the things I always ask is, how do you look after yourself? How do you make sure that you're able to strike that balance, which you mentioned before is sometimes difficult, right?
Absolutely. So look, really proud. We are a purpose-led organization, we do try to, I mean, that doesn't mean we're perfect again. It means we're aspiring to be purpose-driven at all times, and it permeates through the whole organization. We call ourselves the Army of Mad Make a Difference, and our dream, we don't have a vision, we have a dream. Our dream is to champion Australia and New Zealand to the healthiest and best protected nation in the world. I can honestly say, I think the dream is to have a healthier, longer, better life in these wonderful countries of ours. You know, we want to champion that cause. We don't think we can do it on our own. And, you know, vitality, we do that through helping people. So helping people to live healthier, longer, better lives is being there for them to be well, but through vitality, which is, you know, the wellbeing program we have, taking small steps across, simple steps, right? Across little things, across moving well, eating well, thinking well, which is mental wellbeing, and planning, because that's really important to the first three. And then, you know, getting well, you know, so if something happens, we've got our health insurance business, so we can help people through those little incidences. And then get well, if they do have a claim on their life insurance, how can we help them get back to a productive, healthy life? So it's really that support and assistance in that, you know, we've got Restore Our Mental Wellbeing Program, Pain Revolution, Cancer Aid, all of those things that we look at. But mental health is a big issue. We try to walk the talk here. We've got our recharge days once a quarter, so people just get a day off to recharge, take care of the things that need to be taken care of, for some of them, it could be just doing the bills, it could be whatever, but it's having a recharge day, because you know, it's no meetings on a Friday afternoon anymore. You know, wearing active wear to work, so you know, people can walk around when they do come to the office, or walk and get active. But look, me personally, you know, I have struggled with this over time. In fact, I was very naive in this area. I thought that I was a superhero because I could survive on less than 3 to 4 hours sleep a night, do 150 flights a year, still run and train and hit the weights every day. So my physical fitness was phenomenal. And I met Dr. Jamie Lee, and she introduced me to, well, there's the IQ, the EQ, and the HQ, the health quotient. And just really quickly, what that showed was that, you know, wearing a tracker for 2 days, I was, my Garmin will tell me, VO2 max elite, 92 out of 100. But my sleep restoration was 6 out of 100. And my stress recovery was 26 out of 100. So essentially, Colin, I was a prime candidate for a health issue, even though I was physically feeling fine. And then we've just done conducted the largest global research into mental health with Quantium, using 1.5 billion bits of health data, 10 years. This is an important message for people, 5 million lives over 10 years. And the good news is, while we intuitively know, yes, there are non-controllable risk factors like gender, age, illness, but there are 30% of the link to depression is factors that we can control. Exercise, walking 10,000 steps a day. People who do more exercise or do it at a high intensity have a lower risk of those that do 2,000 or less by over half, right? Sleep, back to the sleep. Those who sleep less than 4 hours a night, 32% higher depression rate than those who sleep 7 to 8, and diet, and of course, smoking and alcohol. But the key here, Colin, is there are small things we can do. This is not about, in fact, if we look at the 300,000 incidences that potentially could be prevented if we just practiced slightly average healthier activity, could be prevented every year. And that's about 4.7 million workdays. $3 billion to the economy.
Yeah, and there's a good balance there you just talked about, Damien, which we haven't heard of on the podcast before, where I think often the emphasis is on IQ. Do you have the knowledge? Do you have the skills? EQ, are you able to moderate your emotion and create connection with people? But the HQ there is, are you the fittest you can be to do those other two well? And it strikes me that that's possibly the most important one. And yet we don't really talk about that very often, do we?
Yeah, no, the health question is so important. And, you know, now that I've learned more about it, and you can have micro recoveries, like you can find 5-minute micro recoveries during the day. It doesn't have to be, Colin, I'm not an hour meditator. Okay, but I can do the 10 minutes and find the 5 minutes. And there are little, go for a walk around the block, you know, little things like that that can make a big difference. And, you know, you have to change your belief system here, okay? Because my belief system was that I have to keep working harder and harder to do more and more and more for people. What I had to change my belief system is, if I really wanted to be the best leader and have the best impact I could, then it was important for me to look after myself, because I'm a better leader with an extra hour sleep. So it doesn't have to a 4 in the alarm, a 5 is okay. In fact, I found a 6, and I can actually be more impactful because I'm more present, you know, all the things. So you've got to change your belief system that if you give yourself and are kinder to yourself and balance out your health, you will have the potential to get exponential. So imagine how much better. I look at it in the positive. If my stress recovery was 26 out of 100 and I'm able to do what I'm doing, imagine if I could just improve it to 40 out of 100. So look, really important, Colin, and having a culture of walking the talk. If we're going to talk about healthy lives, then I've got to, you know, that dream, then I've got to walk the talk on that as well. And again, it's not about running marathons, not about having no oil, no whatever. It's just about small things that make incremental improvement across those.
Fabulous. So I got one final question, because I know I could just say, oh, you're the finished leader. I know what you'll say. You'll say, I'm never the finished leader. So I'm just wondering, the evolution of Damien, what do you do, Damien, to kind of keep yourself relevant? What do you do to stay on top of latest trends, knowledge? So what do you do to get the best out of yourself?
Yeah, that's another great question. So yes, you're never the finished. I mean, I think that's the purpose of life, is finding your purpose. we're constantly evolving. So if you ever think you've arrived somewhere or got somewhere, then it's time to go. But the reason I paused on it is because I asked myself that question not long ago. So, you know, for whatever reason, I've been CEO now for 7 years, and before going for the seventh and going through another sort of cycle, a business cycle, not personal cycle, business cycle, I had to ask myself, you know, it's an exciting opportunity, but do I have the ability to reinvent myself? Because you need to, right? Because what got us here was great, but what we need moving forward is the organization needs refreshment. Now, that can come by a new CEO, or can I do it myself and really have the energy to do it? You know, it's been a long road, but absolutely, I felt like I had the energy to do it. And the reason I was able to do that, because I was able to sort of built into my regime, self-reflection, you know, absolutely challenging myself to embrace difference, not accept difference, embrace difference. Okay, so we talk about a lot of organizations, they talk about, we accept diversity and inclusion, we accept, you know, this number, that that number. It's, do they embrace it? Okay. So would you, because when you embrace it, you actually not just say, hey, come into the organization because you're different and now do this like this. So what I mean by that is I've actually embraced difference and put different people, skills around me. You know, I've had to learn a lot around digital and customer that, you know, seemed intuitively obvious, but weren't things that we put into practice in the life insurance industry for a long time. So yes, you got to stay relevant. I do it by different components. Self-reflection is the most important one for me. Having great mentors and coaches, because you can always learn. And they're also like therapy sessions. for both people. Reading and staying, when I say reading is also, you know, it could be podcasts, it could be little videos, it could be little books, it could be little anything, getting that extra energy. Yep. And then, you know, just being present with people, because there's a wealth of knowledge everywhere and experience. And if I can tap into, you can tap into it without actually realizing by just having a chat to someone.
Damien, that's awesome. I've got a load of vitality, ironically, just from speaking to you. I want to say a big thank you for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast today. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin, and congratulations on the work you're doing, and thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please remember to subscribe or share the link on your social media platform of choice, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you hang out. You can also forward it onto your colleagues and friends and help them to inspire and motivate others too. Better still, why not keep the conversation going and join our community of culture makers from around the world who share information on the things that have worked and haven't worked? You can do that at www.culturefixcommunity.com. And remember, sharing is caring. See you next time.